Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need to get ready for Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back because they know small businesses can make a big difference. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. I'll be with my friends. I'm just trying to make you a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. When the book is written on the market's performance this month, there will be one lone hero, one company that launched rallies in hundreds of good stocks. And that savior was none other than the failed Silicon Valley Bank. Rallies that included today, the Dow gained 323 points, S&P jumped 1.42%, and the NASDAQ pole vaulted 1.79%.
House of pleasure.
Yep, the useful idiots at the helm of the previously smart merchant bank set off a domino-like financial catastrophe, and we have to thank them for it because the crisis stayed the hand of the most aggressive Federal Reserve in 40 years. Without the overnight collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, we might have been hit with an additional 50 basis point rate hike on top of the quarter point we got last week. That's how hot this economy remains. And I bet the averages would be substantially lower than they stand right now. Instead, we've been enjoying a rally centered around the NASDAQ of all places that's left behind so many strategists lost in the weeds of something abstruse and allegedly all-knowing, and it's called the yield curve. These thumb-sucking economists care so much about the macro, yet somehow they're always missing the big picture. What a bunch of gas bags. They must be paid by the word, certainly not by the capital gain.
They know nothing!
Nobody can blame the Fed for slowing down the pace of its rate hikes. Until a few weeks ago, we didn't care that so many bags had taken their COVID boosted deposits and invested them in the longer-term bonds that were practically guaranteed to take losses in the event of aggressive rate hikes, which we got. We didn't have a clue that old-fashioned bank runs could happen so swiftly. Who knew that a bank like SVB could have a deposit base of venture capitalists, billionaires, by the way, often, that wanted their money back all at once because they hadn't been able to bring their portfolio companies public in this comatose IPO market. We saw billions of dollars exit with a couple of keystrokes, and practically overnight, this fixture of a merchant bank just vanished, leaving legions of panicked depositors in its wake. Suddenly, corporate treasurers felt compelled to pull their money from the regional banks and put it in the safest place around, J.P. Morgan, a couple of other titans, because why take the risk of a bank run, only $250,000 in insurance? But when you go through all the ramifications of the SVB failure, they actually end up breaking positive, not negative, for much of the stock market, all because of the Federal Reserve. A month ago, the Fed was fighting one more, the war against inflation. Then we got an instant financial crisis, so suddenly they also needed to worry about bank runs, which are the most deflationary force in existence. So what's happened in the wake of Silicon Death Valley? First, investors dug up the playbook of what you can buy when there's an economic slowdown without high inflation, because that's the typical result of a credit crunch. In a sluggish economy, the Wall Street playbook says you buy tech, but not just any tech. You buy tech that's brimming with cash and doesn't need to tap the equity or bond markets. Pristine techs that have so much money, they actually look like banks, without all those pesky risks of running a bank, credit losses, tellers. That may sound like a weird way to invest, but you know this show is about pulling back the curtain so you can find out what's really going on. And you need to understand that this is truly the way money is managed in this country. And the great thing about trying to figure out which stocks to buy in this new scenario is that they're already chosen for you. Yep, you go for after the most obvious big-name techs that are carrying around boatloads of cash. For instance, you go with, of course, Apple. Today, people lapped up the launch of Apple's Buy Now, Pay Later service, where they'll advance you anywhere from $50 to $1,000, then you pay them back in 4 installments. Oh, it's a nice hook. The news actually broke, though, yesterday at 11:30 a.m., and no one seemed to care then. See, the real reason Apple stock keeps going higher is because the bears, they have run out of ammunition, at least for the moment. They tried to float the idea that the service revenue was slowing, and that didn't work. They circulated the usual surfeit of component supply surveys. Pushbacks from a lack of demand fell flat. They even went with the sales hurt by the China Cold War thesis, something that didn't hold up under close scrutiny given CEO Tim Cook's rapturous appearance in the PRC this week. Any of these stories might have wrecked that stock last year, but this is now a market where Apple gets the benefit of the doubt, again, thanks to the First National Bank of doofuses. Of course, Meta Whatever was able to put on a good show, too. What a remarkable moment. Think about this. Mark Zuckerberg, perhaps the most reviled man to testify in front of Congress, at least if you exclude the bankers, has managed to beef up his TikTok killer reels just when Congress wants to back handily do his bidding by threatening to block the Chinese-owned TikTok. He's the Manchurian Meta candidate. At the same time, Zuckerberg's laying off people left and right, which is exactly what this market loves. No wonder the stock's been a huge winner. But then, seemingly out of nowhere, unless you watch this show on even a cursory basis, NVIDIA managed to steal the stage. CEO Jensen Huang's annual keynote address happened to come exactly when the banking crisis struck the most fear in the hearts of many a distracted investor. They missed the moment when the man I call the modern-day Da Vinci unleashed a technology that may be as revolutionary as the cell phone, the internet, and maybe even the wheel, certainly the helicopter. I am talking about generative artificial intelligence, or AI. In one brilliant 78-minute lecture, Wong showed us how AI could be immediately added to the bottom lines of the likes of Microsoft, Adobe, Oracle, all apostles of the NVIDIA gospel, among so many other companies. The event was tailor-made for them. It produced a NASDAQ stock bonanza.
That was easy.
But that's not all. Chaotic moments like we had in the wake of the Silicon Valley Bank, Silvergate, and Signature Bank, the three stooges of banking, tend to embolden short sellers. They sense that a slowing economy would bring about a hobbled consumer and a weakened housing market. Larry, Mo, Curly, Shemp, even Joe couldn't resist trying to take advantage of this bank bloodbath. So naturally, they targeted stocks like, let's say, Cintas, okay? They reported today. It's an outfit that supplies uniforms to small, medium-sized businesses because isn't business getting weaker, right? Isn't that what's happening? Stock worth 21 points or about 5% on massive beat. Oh, they honed in on Micron, the bedraggled commodity chipmaker. A bottom beckons, and next thing you know, they're squeezed for a 7% gain. They gun for expensive retailers like Lululemon, and they are gaffed for 40 points or 12%. These were all great shorts in theory, but in mad money, we're talking practice. They shorted these stocks, unwittingly issuing invitations, yes, indeed, to their own funerals. Finally, the pessimists reached for the stocks of companies they would assume would experience a slowdown in orders from the inevitable credit crunch, a credit crunch that frankly hasn't surfaced yet. I'm talking, say, Caterpillar, Illinois Tool Works, classic cyclicals that normally get blasted to kingdom come in a slowdown. Now they have to average up or cut their losses. You know what, guys, do the latter. Oh, and let's not forget customer relationship management kingpin Salesforce, with CEO Mark Benioff knocking off not one, not two, not three, not four, but five activists with a slingshot and some amazing earnings. Benioff's a collateral winner. Silicon Valley Bank was nurturing some competitors that have just had their oxygen turned off. Turned off the oxygen. Toto. Now, I'm not saying these events wouldn't have happened if not for the bad bank domino theory, but I think they would have been interpreted differently for certain. Yep, fewer tech stocks would be getting the benefit of the doubt if the Fed hit us with a 50 basis point rate hike and a few hikes more, which may well have been in the cards without the bank runs. Of course, we don't know what lurks in the banking world. People keep shouting from the rooftops that Schwab's next. I mean, wait, Schwab, that's one of the most ill-advised positions I've heard. And as I explained earlier this week, it's a good stock. First Republic, apart from a distant, they think that's a distant resemblance to SVB? I don't know. Certainly we could come in tomorrow and find some ne'er-do-well bank grasping at federal straws. There's one thing we know for sure, though. This banking crisis has spooked the Fed, and that's allowed all sorts of growth stocks to come back in style on, yes, indeed, the Wall Street runway. The bottom line, this market may be mindless, but it's got muscle memory that says you reach for tech in a slowdown. The Silicon Valley bank fiasco was just the oxygen that tech bull needed to snap out of its funk and get back to work in time to give you a nearly 14% gain for the Nasdaq in what's looking to be the 3 months that fooled the world. Dale in Kentucky. Dale.
Booyah, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. What's going on?
Hey, got a question for you. I'm invested in a company that I know they do a lot to help reduce carbon emissions in hospitals and factories and schools and such. What's your thoughts on Trane Technologies going forward?
I think those guys are good. I'm going to give them a twofer. I think you get a twofer. I'm going to throw in Carrier because I like what they're doing, too. So that wasn't just one. I gave you two. How about Zimmy in Florida? Zimmy!
Mr. Kramer, what's happening?
Not much. How about you?
Oh, you know, just living life in Florida. But, you know, like many regional investors.
So you got the edge of me.
There.
You have to rub it in. He has to rub it in. He's in Florida. I'm here in New York. What's up?
Yeah. You know, just like many retail investors out there, I got in at Tesla at probably around like $30 a share. And given that our boy Jerome Powell is looking like he's going to cut rates later this year due to a recession, is it time now really to sell Tesla?
No. And let's say the one thing that's great about Tesla, we don't need Jay to make money because we got Elon. And Elon is real and he's great. By the way, you're in Florida. I saw a launch. Go see a launch. It's mind blowing. It's one of the greatest things I've ever done. Let's go to Paul in Texas. Paul.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah.
I'd like to discuss some homework I've done on Syneos Health, ticker SYNH. Now, I know we shouldn't buy a stock for a takeover bid, but this one's really interesting.
No. Tell me what's interesting about it. Well, the reason I say that, if only because it's like I myself have to do something about it. I don't understand how this stock could be so cheap. And usually when there's something this cheap, it means there's a story behind it. So we're going to come back and we're going to learn what's really going on. All right. When it's all said and done, the blow-up of Silicon Valley Bank may play down as the market's saving grace, and not a moment too soon. On Mad Money Tonight, Macy's CEO Jeff Gennett announced his plans to retire in February of next year, and I'm learning more about the company's succession plan with the man himself. Then earlier, I had a chance to talk to GSK CEO Emma Walmsley as part of CNBC's Healthy Returns Conference, and we're showing you a piece of that interview that you do not want to miss. And Paychex has its finger on the pulse of small, medium-sized businesses in this country. So where does this corner of our economy stand with regional banks in limbo and the Fed on a mission to tame inflation? I'm digging into the details with the CEO. So stay with Kramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
1 in 8. That's how many people have worked at a McDonald's. Who'll serve millions the best Big Mac and best birthday party they've ever had. Who haven't just seen kids graduate from a Happy Meal, but have gotten help graduating themselves. Because they know the skills learned here.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to English Under the Arches.
Can help you grow from here or keep growing here.
Hi, welcome to McDonald's.
1 in 8 start at McDonald's. And where you start stays with you.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This morning, Jeff Kennett, the chairman and CEO of Macy's, announced he'll be stepping down in February of next year and handing over his position to Tony Spring, who currently runs Bloomingdale's. I think Kennett's done an incredible job here. Macy's was spiraling when he took over in February of 2018, crushed under a heavy debt load, failing to find its place in a retail landscape increasingly dominated by e-commerce. Then just as he got the situation stabilized, COVID hit. Stores had to shut down. But Macy's got through it because of Kennett. Not only that, they stuck with Kennett's turnaround plan and came out of the pandemic much stronger than they were when they went into it. While we've still got some time before the transition, we need to know more about what is happening here. So let's check in with Jeff Kennett. He's the chairman and CEO of Macy's. Now that he's on his last year on the job. Mr. Kennett, welcome back to Mad Money.
Great to be with you, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Jeff, well, look, it's bittersweet. I'm thrilled that you're here. But I think you've done an amazing job, and you finally got the place to where it's really ready to soar. So I can only ask, why leave the best job in the world? Why? Why now?
I think that's exactly as you described it, because it is ready for me to hand it off. You know, I'm a 40-year veteran of this company, so just know that I wasn't going to hand it off until the company was ready, until the talent was ready. And, you know, look, I worked with the board of directors on this for 2 years. We looked at internal and external candidates, and we landed on Tony Spring as our CEO-elect, and with a dual promotion of Adrian Mitchell as our chief operating officer, in addition to what he's done with CFO. So we can talk about each of those decisions, but I'm very excited about the talent that's going to take Macy's, you know, back to profitable growth in 24 and beyond.
Well, why don't you tell us a little more about Tony Spring? We know, you know, I love Bloomingdale's. We joke about it a lot off camera. But the numbers have been very good there. What's he got in mind, you think?
Yeah, so Tony is, first off, he's been with Bloomingdale's his entire career. And I think when you talk about Tony, he is an innovator for the customer. He is a brand builder. And this guy is a great team leader. And what he's been able to orchestrate with the Bloomingdale's brand over his tenure has been extraordinary. And if you just look at 2022, he took market share from his luxury, you know, the luxury neighborhood. He basically had the peak volume year in Bloomingdale's history, peak customer satisfaction, orchestrated the 150th anniversary with aplomb, you know, bringing in new customers, retaining the existing ones to new spend levels. Also, over the last year and a half, Tony was running, he was at Bluemercury, and he was overseeing what Mally Bernstein, as the new CEO, has been doing, picking up big shoes that Marlon Barry Beck left, the founders, and that is now on new growth territory. The other thing I love about Tony is for the past 3 years, he's been a corporate officer of Macy's. So we've been right in the trenches with me and my senior team, really divining where Polaris is going to go, new growth factors. So this guy is going to hit the ground running. Very excited about Tony's leadership and his potential running all of Macy's, Inc.
Well, you've had so many great initiatives, and you mentioned the Polaris strategy, and you've done so much to make it so that the footing here is great during one of the most difficult times to ever run a retailer. What do you want your legacy to be?
You know, the teams that I've created, the strategies that are in play, the new customers that we are going to acquire, that's all part of it. Look over my, I guess this is my left shoulder. Mission Everyone is our platform for social purpose. And so you know my personal story. So, you know, coming out, you know, very early in my career and being in a culture like Macy's, which its DNA is all about, you know, this diverse stew of cultures that we have in this country, and really to put teeth behind that. And what Mission Everyone did with the $5 billion strategy that we launched last year, we're well on our way to improve the planet, what we're doing for communities, what we're doing for our colleagues and our customers. It's been one of my proudest moments to take what is just inherently, this is our core values at Macy's, and to really put teeth in this and to really operate at scale a DE&I strategy that is making a difference. Well, that's probably what I'm most proud of.
Okay, I think of you as someone who is really at the heart of business being the greatest force for social change and unity in this country. Will you be able to continue that status in some way after you leave Macy's?
So this is what I said to my husband, that I wasn't going to make any decisions until after I retired. What I am looking forward to, I've got 10 more months, and I am so committed to, with the steering wheel in my hands of being CEO and chairman, of ensuring that this is a very smooth transition. And I know that I'm going to come around thinking about what chapter two is. Nothing to report today. I do know that I'm going to spend more time with my family. You know, my daughter is graduating college in a couple of months. My husband has been retired for a bit, so I'm going to enjoy that. But I will do something else. I don't know what that is yet. You're going to be one of the first that I'm going to tell, though.
Oh, I sure hope so, because I've enjoyed our friendship so greatly. I remember the first time I sat down with you, I said, I'm worried about the balance sheet. And we took a hard look at it. And I was thinking, when I heard that you wanted to come on today, I was thinking, I know that there's a 6 1/8 piece of paper that is annoying you for a couple of years out. You pay it back. I did not know that it was going to be time for you to be able to set sail. But I want to tell you, I think that Blue Mercury and Bloomingdale's, in many ways, could be the stars for the next 5 years. How do you advance them so that people realize how incredibly unique they are as retail properties?
So you see what we're doing with Bloomingdale's right now. And so obviously we have a brick and mortar strategy that includes new off-mall formats with Bloomies. You see what we're doing with our website. So we've doubled the website in the last 3 years. And, you know, Tony's leadership on that. We're bringing in new brands all the time. So that has lots of potential. And you think about 50 major DMAs in the country, Bloomingdale's is in 18 of those. So we have a lot of opportunity to continue to put down flags, which spins omnichannel business, stronger digital penetration. So lots of opportunities with Bloomingdale's, with big ambition there. Blue Mercury, as you mentioned, you know, that just is continues. The moment we operate or we open a store, it's profitable, almost in the first year, virtually every one of them. That is an amazing formula, luxury beauty. What we have in terms of a service culture there, you know, this cocktail and curated level of brands, both in beauty, both in, you know, color treatment as well as fragrance, home fragrance. What we do with our spa services, you know, huge opportunities to continue to expand that. That's what gets us excited about Tony's leadership, his ability to influence that, you know, on Macy's. You mentioned the balance sheet, just to underline the great strength we have with Adrian, what he's been able to do with not only his financial prowess, but how he operates omnichannel at scale, his strategic abilities. This is a great 1-2 punch that we are going to be handing over, you know, this year and going into 24 and beyond.
Well, I am thrilled for you. I did fear wistfulness, because I know how much you love Macy's. I know how much you love your job, but you also have your priorities right. I want to congratulate you for everything that you have done, for all the people who work at Macy's, and of course, for all of us very satisfied customers. That's Jeff Gennette, Chairman and CEO of Macy's. Always great to see you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, many healthy returns to you. Kramer dons the scrubs for an interview from CNBC's annual gathering you won't want to miss when we return.
You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Earlier today, CNBC hosted its annual Healthy Returns Summit, featuring world-class virtual gathering of industry leaders in biopharma, medical technology, and managed care. During that event, I got a chance to speak with Dame Emma Walmsley. She's the CEO of GSK. That's the drug company formerly known as GlaxoSmithKline that's been through a pretty radical transformation under her leadership. Take a look. Dame Emma, it is always great to see you. You're at the cutting edge of a company that actually, literally, when you took it over, I felt was a little bit cats and dogs. But now you are addressing the major issues of our time. I don't want to just limit to RSV. You've got what I regard as being a strategy for the prevention and treatment of diseases that previous we've had nothing for.
Well, hi, Jim, first of all, and thank you so much for having me on today. I'm sure an exciting day and an exciting time for the industry. And certainly, as you say, for GSK. I mean, we have been through quite a radical transformation as a company over the last 5 years. We're now a pure play biopharma, and as you said, absolutely after the major demerger of Haleon, and absolutely resolutely focused on getting ahead of disease, literally by preventing it and treating it. And that is really taking advantage of this explosion in technologies, new vaccines technologies that we've seen, of course mRNA, but also adjuvant technologies and new emerging technologies, which we think will contribute later in the decade. But also this great phenomena of adult vaccination. Preventing disease is always better, or intervening earlier in disease, but preventing it before it starts is always better for individual patients, for the heavy burden on healthcare budgets, but also systems and keeping people out of hospitals. I think the CDC says that there are a million hospitalizations in America alone from vaccine-preventable diseases.
Well, let's talk about that, Emma. One of the things that I find again and again in your business is awareness. I mean, for instance, I have friends who have shingles. They don't know about Shingrix. They will not know about your new vaccine. What about this gap between how evolutionary to revolutionary you become and the system itself, which is simply evolutionary and doesn't even know about these things?
Well, it's a great point, because if you'd, I mean, you know, one in three of us will get shingles, extremely painful. And that's why, you know, we our business grew. We had a record year last year, over £3 billion worth of business. And we still expect to keep growing very strongly with Shingrix again this year and for the years ahead. 3 years ago, if you'd have asked the general public, you know, have you heard of RSV? What is RSV? I think people would have really struggled to be aware of it. But just this last season, you heard a lot more public information actually about, you know, a triple-demic, a triple season through the winter, whether that be ongoing COVID, obviously flu, but also RSV. And actually awareness now, which is, you know, really good to hear. Awareness now is up at over 50% in, you know, many parts of the general public, also with prescribers, very very importantly, and with pharmacists in retail. So we are seeing that growing right now. Magic Johnson is out communicating on a general disease awareness campaign to sideline RSV. So I think this is something we're very, very thoughtful about, but also communicating with responsibility and transparency on, you know, the efficacy and the data on the vaccine too. So, you know, where you're absolutely right is in many ways, vaccination is a consumer product. So we need to make sure that we communicate very clearly on the benefits that can come from, you know, stopping these diseases before they start.
Well, in this way, I thought that COVID was actually, no one ever wanted to equate money with disease, but it was a boon for you. I found out about Shingrix because I went to get my COVID vaccine. And my CVS practitioner said, where are you with Shingrix? And until then, I just said, well, I don't know. I hear about it. I guess it's good. I mean, you've gotten people into the drugstores. They're now part of your effort to make it so more people live.
Well, that's absolutely right. And actually, it's interesting. We have published some data that if you have suffered from COVID, your propensity with a weakened immune system to actually develop shingles goes up. But I think what's key in this is exactly the point you just referred to, which is whether it be because the general public has got used to and understands the benefits of vaccination, or frankly, the retailers have set up the systems and the data to, access patients, but particularly traffic in their stores, is really important to continue to protect the general public and keep them out of hospital, both for the associated costs, but also the burden of disease that can develop too. So lots of opportunity ahead.
Well, one of the things I love about your administration of the company, you're not afraid to fail. I mean, you're taking on things like UTI. Now, everyone knows that there's been resistance, okay? The bacteria's beating us. People know that. We think that the bacteria, that frankly there's resistance and the community resistance can't be beaten. Not you. You say, you know what? This is an illness that millions of people suffer for. I'm not going to just say, hey, listen, we lost this battle. I'm going to go take it on.
Well, I this is a great topic, and a lot of people, this is really foundationally important, Jim. A lot of people refer to AMR, antimicrobial resistance, as the slow pandemic. If the world does not develop new and effective antibiotics, the assessments are that 10 million people a year will be dying by 2050. And from diseases now that we are really used to treating with antibiotics, but where resistance is building. So we are absolutely delighted, whether that be in our homegrown, home-developed, insight, organically developed portfolio with Gepotidacin. That's hopefully going to be a new and exciting launch for a very common problem of UTIs, urinary tract infections, where resistance can be quite high. And we think it's going to be hopefully the first new antibiotic for many decades in this disease, which will help address this. And we stopped that clinical trial for efficacy a bit early, but also we've done some BD, again you referred to it earlier, for a new asset for more complicated infections, and we continue to be very thoughtful about investment here.
Well, Dame Emma Walmsley, CEO of GSK, you are a terrific spokesperson for the industry, and I want to thank you so much.
Coming up, inflation, China, and Fed hikes, oh my. For a bird's eye view of the economy, count on Paychex. Next.
Everybody's worried about wage inflation, and maybe they should keep worrying. This morning, we got results from Paychex, the payroll processor and human resources outsourcer, mostly focused on small, medium-sized businesses, and the numbers were just spectacular. Company reported a solid top and bottom line beat. Management also raised numbers for its current fiscal year, which ends in May, and gave you a very encouraging forecast for its next fiscal year, which starts in June. In response, the stock roared, jumped 6.5%, in part because it had pulled back pretty hard going into the quarter, in part because people were thinking that maybe business is slowing. It's not. Can it keep climbing? Let's take a closer look with John Gibson. He's the relatively new president and CEO of Paychex. Learn more about the quarter. Mr. Gibson, welcome back to Mad Money.
Jim, it's great to be back with you.
Well, I'll tell you, we need you. This is one of the most confusing moments I have ever seen in business. We've got a national banking system everybody's worried about. We have a Fed that keeps raising rates. And then I look at your numbers, and it's almost as if it's just a terrific time for small, medium-sized businesses in this country.
Well, you're right. You're right, Jim. We just reported our third quarter, and it was another solid quarter. We beat revenue and earnings estimates. We reaffirmed our guidance to the high end of the range. And our value proposition, as we talked about the last couple quarters, our value proposition continues to resonate in the market. I really think the market is seeing the value of a company like Paychex as a stable, trusted advisor in challenging times, and that's really helping us.
Well, I think people have to realize that the government keeps giving things that you need your help on. For instance, in the conference call, I saw that the Secure Act 2. And I said, well, I don't know anything about the Secure Act 2, but if I'm a small, medium-sized business person, I got to know about that. And the only way you would know about it is through paychecks.
That's correct. You know, the advisory services that we're providing and the education we're providing on government programs is one of the key reasons why I think you're seeing us have record revenue retention, because what we're doing is having an impact to our clients. The Secure Act, too, most people aren't aware of it, but if you're a 20 to 50 person company and you don't have a 401k plan, you can come to Paychex, start a plan, and all of the startup costs and all of the administrative costs will be covered through tax credits. And you can give each one of your employees a $1,000 match. In many cases, you'll get that back as well.
Well, that's a terrific way to retain in an era where, as you said in your conference call, it's still difficult to keep good people. We are not in a situation yet where there's just a lot of people looking for jobs.
You're absolutely right, Jim. Look, we have a significant labor participation challenge that I think policymakers need to address. And when you're a small or medium-sized business, you've got to compete against larger employers who are offering all these benefits. So I applaud the government. I applaud the Congress and the president for signing the Secure Act 2. I think those type of programs, I think the employer ERTC program, the tax credits, is also another good way to kind of support Main Street small business owners.
Well, John, I've got to tell you, if I was a small business person with a company that had, say, $800,000 in a bank that's insured to $250,000, and you have a lot of customers that I think are like that, I know I would call Paychex and say, am I safe with this bank? What are you advising people who do have small businesses that have more money than that $250,000 insurance?
Well, look, Jim, I think it's important that everybody understand you shouldn't have all your eggs in one basket. And I certainly think that's good advice for everyone. You look at our business and what recently happened. We had no impact at all, no cash, no investments in any of the banks that were impacted. We met all of our obligations. And quite frankly, we're telling clients that they need to be with stable providers that have access to a multitude of different funding mechanisms in these challenging times.
Well, maybe you could explain, because you work with so many small local businesses. There is a reason why you stay with these banks. Not everybody puts their money with J.P. Morgan. You like your people to be embedded in the community. And it also helps them be able to hire and have a steady workforce, correct?
There's no question about it. And one of my bigger concerns here that I think is going to have to be addressed is, you know, we already had rising interest rates, and that was increasing the cost of capital. Now, with a few bad actors, we potentially have a regional bank start to constrict access to capital. And that's not good for small business owners. And one of the things I keep telling people, I think there's two different worlds we're dealing with right now. One is Main Street small business owners and Silicon Valley. And they're two different groups of individuals. A Main Street small business owners weren't out spending money like there was no tomorrow. They weren't overpaying people. They weren't over hiring. They weren't hiring and paying people too much. They're trying to make payroll each and every day. And I think we have two different things that have happened. We have a bubble that's burst by easy money chasing technology companies. And I think policymakers need to be stepping in to make sure that there's access to capital for the Main Street small business owner who didn't have all these benefits of the tech bubble.
Well, there is an irony there. You've got hardworking people trying to make a living, build up business. It's obviously the backbone of our country's small, medium-sized business. And then you have, frankly, a group of people, not all, but who many of them were billionaires. And I don't want to say it, but it seems like that in many ways they wrecked it for everybody else.
Well, look, Jim, I think the key thing for policymakers is to recognize is they're managing a very complex situation that they need to look at. There's two things going on, in my opinion. The wage inflation is driven more by the labor supply. We need to do more to incent people to get to work. We need to do more to increase the labor participation rate. That's going to increase the supply of labor. That'll reduce the wage inflation issues that I think the Fed's trying to tackle. And then, as we just talked about on the banking side, diversification is the key for everybody. And I certainly hope that what happened in a couple situations doesn't trickle down and hurt the Main Street small business owner. And I think the government regulators need to be very sensitive to that when they're putting together their remedies.
At the main, also, Tim, just in terms of the country, we have some regions that are just red hot. I'm seeing them in housing, and I'm sure you're seeing them in jobs. What are the regions where it is just smoking out there?
Look, Jim, there's no question that job growth, as a matter of fact, let's go on the macro side. So in January and February, our job index, which has been a good indicator of small business growth, actually went up both of those months. We've not seen that for some period of time, so there's still strong growth. When you get under that, the South has clearly been the winner. The South has continued to lead the index there. Think Texas, think Florida, almost all regions of the South. When we look at any type of real weakness, the West and portions of the Northeast.
Wow. Well, look, it's a remarkable two countries. Don't want two countries, obviously, but it sure feels like we've got them right now. John Gibson, President and CEO of Paychex, thank you for coming on the show.
Jim, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Mad Money, be right back.
Coming up, what's in your mind, Kramerica? Give us a call. The lightning round is storming the NYSE. Next.
And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the light round question. But start with George in Texas. George.
Hey, Jimbo. How you doing?
I'm doing good, George. How about you?
Great. Hey, I wanted to ask what you thought about C3 AI. Kathy Wood is very bullish on the space.
That's nice, and I like Tom Siebel. I've known Tom Siebel for about three decades. That said, if I want to be an AI, I am going to be an NVIDIA because they make money and they can't fill all their orders. Let's go to Susan in Rhode Island. Susan.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. My father watched your show religiously along with Jeopardy. Several months ago, after hearing an interview with Carl Icahn, I bought 50 shares of CVR Energy. Should I hold on to it or buy more?
You know what? We got Marathon Pete, MPC, putting up great numbers. Sells at 5x earnings. Recommended by Goldman Sachs today. I'd sell yours and go into mine. How about Jared in Texas? Jared.
Hey, Jim. Big booyah from Texas.
Good to have you on the show, Jared. What's going on?
Hey, so took a position in AMD all of last year when semis were getting sold off. You thinking it'll go back up 110, 120?
I like the position they're in. Now, when I was listening to the Mike Grant call, I was conscious of the fact that not all of AMD's, it's not hitting on all cylinders right now. But when it does, I see 120. I say stay long. Let's go to Trey in Texas. Trey.
Booyah, Jim. Let's talk Booz Allen Hamilton. B-A-H, baby.
Just a very, very good, undervalued, unheralded company. I liked it from the day it came public, which was a lot lower, and I want you to stay long. Trav in Massachusetts. Trav.
Hi, Jim. Suburban Propane, symbol SPH.
I don't like the propane business. Thank you, Rusty Brazil, for informing me about how volatile. It's way too volatile. I would rather see you in Enterprise Partners, EPD, because that's much more consistent. Or, by the way, I saw an upgrade today of Enbridge. So Enterprise Products or Enbridge are both better than Suburban Propane. Let's go to Chuck in Georgia. Chuck.
Hey, booyah, Jim from Roswell, Georgia. How are you, buddy?
I am doing well. How about you? What's happening?
Hey, man, not a lot. Hey, Jim, I'll be honest with you. I'm big on data, man. I want to go long for data. Anybody, you know, dealing in data, anybody data storage, that's what really what I'm looking to do. And I found
you kind of into data. You're a data guy. How about a stock?
I'm a data guy, man. I'm a data guy. I'm driving down the road, and I see this down the highway. I see this company. It's a Saturday. The parking lot is full of employee cars. I like seeing people working on Saturday, Jim. And this company, okay. I looked them up. They've got $4 billion in customer backlog.
Okay.
$6 billion.
And what stock is that with the parking lot filled? What stock is that there?
17% revenue growth, Jim. I mean, the company has their position.
All right, you got growth. A compelling story. I just need the stock name.
VRT. Verdict.
Verdict? They've been missing a bunch of cores. Now, Dave Cote is running a company better, but they got to raise the prices. They got to raise prices because they've not been able to keep up with the cost of production. And that, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
So now I'm going to give you a lesson in big-time money management, because this is one of those times when the big money makes big but inscrutable decisions. Exhibit A. Last night we got results from Micron, the giant commodity semiconductor company, and it hit the trifecta. Colossal earnings miss. Hideous revenue shortfall. Gargantuan forecast cut. Wall Street's reaction? Eureka! Time to buy! Now, maybe you think you're supposed to sell a stock when the quarter's that bad, but not with something like Micron. These guys make the most commoditized semiconductors, the kind that fluctuate wildly in price, depending on supply and demand. They make the memory that goes into PCs, cell phones, data centers, cars. At various times, there is indeed a mad dash for these chips because one or more of their end markets get so hot. When the pandemic got rolling, for example, the demand was off the charts for PCs as people built out their home offices. So Micron geared up like crazy, but making all sorts of chips for all sorts of equipment, anything. And so did, by the way, arch rival Samsung. At first, things looked real good for both, but once we came out of that pandemic, demand hit a wall, and then it hit another wall, and then it crashed, like a Formula One car, into a retaining barrier. For Micron, it was devastating, the worst downturn in 13 years. Worse, the gigantic Samsung was far more willing to maintain high levels of production just to take unprofitable market share. But this quarter, even Samsung stopped its financial fratricide. And that's really all you need to know. With both Samsung and Micron pulling back on production at the same time, history tells us we're now within two quarters of a potential bottom in pricing. We can't know exactly when that moment will come, but money managers who've seen the cycle like I do know they have to start buying Micron now in anticipation, which is why the stock jumped more than 7% on that lousy quarter. Why are money managers so eager to make this bet? Simple. If they get it right, the payoff's gigantic, like a horse that looks like a long shot, but should really go off 2-1. Consider the returns Micron's given you when you get in right around the bottom. In 2008, the stock flamed out spectacularly, courtesy of the Great Recession, losing 63% of its value. But when the market for its chips went into equilibrium in the next year, it rallied 300%. In 2011, Micron fell 21% on a small glut. Then it was flat for a year, and the glut was worked through. After that, it roared 243%. In 2013, once that glut got cleaned up, it couldn't stop the glut in 2015. How about this one? Stock rallied 54% in 2016 and 87% in 2017 when the glut was done. Or to look at it another way, in 2014, Micron was the 17th best performer in the S&P 500. Next year, fell to 469th, meaning one of the absolute worst performers. Then the business bounced back, which is how it was the 17th best performer in 2016. Then the 13th best in 2017, before falling back to the 379th place when we got another semiconductor glut in 2018. That's what happens with the boom and bust business. That's also why Micron looks so darn compelling down here, because it sure looks like a bottom is at hand. Last year, Micron came in at 466 out of 500 stocks in the S&P in terms of performance. Every product line had gluts. After last night, though, and knowing that main competitor Samsung has finally blinked, there's optimism that the memory chip business can return to equilibrium, maybe in a couple of quarters. If history's any guide, we could have something bordering on a shortage again by 2025. If that's the case, you have to
buy
right now, hand over fist. If you wait, you might miss the bottom, especially if your money manager needs to buy millions of shares before your position is large enough to make a difference to your portfolio. And that's how Micron can report one of the most plug-ugly quarters I've seen in ages, and the big money still sees it as a clarion call to buy. Micron, leaving the paddock, headed for the pole position. They're playing first call. Don't be late. The Micron Derby begins and beckons once again. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.